Beyond iTunes International, as we head into the year 2024, are you excited? Of course you are. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia. Melissa Grima is our correspondent in Melbourne in the state of Victoria. And she comes on every couple of weeks and we chat about all sorts of things. But what I didn't realise is that she is a budding stand-up comedian. Now, that's even premature because she's never done this before. She just went on stage in a pub and started doing a bit of stand-up comedy. And I recommend that she continues on that path. And here's a snippet of her, about 8 minutes long, doing her one and only, so far, stand-up piece. Take a listen.
My name's Melissa. I'm single. My story is about Tinder. Yay! Okay, so I went on a Tinder date with a man who was 10 years older than me. He was in his 50s. He was quite insistent that I go out with him. And I was like, okay, he's enthusiastic. So we met for a drink. Now, typically with these dates, you go for a drink. If things are going well, you might go on to dinner. And he said, Melissa, I'm really having a great time. Would you like to go to dinner? And I said, I would love to go to dinner. And then he said, I don't have any money. What am I going to do? I've already agreed to go to dinner. So apparently he'd been overseas on a work trip and he was in New Zealand and the waiter charged his credit card $5,000 instead of $500 when he brought a round of cocktails for the staff. Okay, so we went to dinner. I paid. And then we had another drink, which he graciously got the round for after my $100 meal. Thanks. He insisted on seeing me home. We were in the city. I live in Carlton. It's not that far. But he insisted. So we go to my door. He's trying to get an invite up. Just let me use the bathroom. I'm thinking this old guy's got like prostate issues. I don't know. I'm going to let him go because he just seems frustrated. And he came up and he used the toilet. And then, you know, we were kind of making out. And he farted. Just couldn't keep it in. He apologised. And I said, right, it's Sunday night. How are you getting home? And he said, I'm going to take public transport. I said, it's Sunday. There's no more public transport. And I thought, no, 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 no. You're not using this excuse to stay. So who paid for his Uber home? Date two. It's his birthday. So, sucker over here goes over. I bring a bottle of red wine for him, a bottle of white for myself because I don't drink red. Then I've gone to Brunetti's and brought him a whole heap of birthday cakes. Oh, I go to his house where he feeds me dinner. He gave me a plate of pasta the size of my hand. Do I look like that's going to fill me up? All right. Nothing. Okay. So, day three. Comes to my house. I do a grazing platter. You know, prosciutto, cheeses, salami, the lot. He calls. Should I bring anything? I'm like, no, no, no. Ethnic host here. I've got everything covered. I'll bring some wine. What does he turn up with, audience? Red. Thank you very much. Sits down in my living room and he says, Melissa, I've got to tell you something. I go, what? He was really serious. I was like, what's going on? And he said, I've got to let you know. I go, what? He goes, I can't sit under fluorescent lights. I'm like, it's not a fluorescent light. It's just a bright light. It's a big living room. He's like, no, no, no. You've got to turn it off. So I had to turn off my living room light. I'm in a one-bedroom apartment. I turn on the kitchen light, the hallway light, the bedroom light, right? Because he's in his 50s, he's afraid that the light's going to make him look old. I ask him after a few drinks, you know, do you mind if I have a cigarette? He didn't really like the idea. I said, it doesn't matter. I don't really smoke, okay? It's fine. An hour passes. I want a cigarette. I've been drinking. I go, I'm going to have a cigarette. He comes out and says, I'm going home. I go, dude, let me finish the cigarette. We'll say goodbye. I come inside, you know, Listerine, toothpaste, Samsara. I come out. I'm like, all right, I'm kissing this guy goodbye, right? I can't breathe. I can't breathe. He fully had a panic attack. He's like, there's cigarette smoke in my lungs. I've got to go to St. Vincent's. Runs out of my house and I hear his tires like screeching on the gravel in the car park. I text him, are you okay? He's like, oh yeah, turns out I was fine. I'm like, yeah, panic attack, you idiot. Anyway, don't hear from him, whatever. I started a new job a couple of weeks ago. And we went to Queensland for a conference. Okay, so I'm there. It's my second day on the job. And we're at a company dinner. And there's a lot of sponsors there. And I'm standing there with my brand new boss. And who do I see? Mr. Red Wine. Okay. And then I click because I remember who he'd work for. And then I know that I've got a 45-minute session with him the next day. And I tell my new boss, and I'm thinking, it's probably not a story for a new boss, right? But I tell him, he goes, Melissa, don't go to the session. But I'm like, I'm brand new in the role. I got to go. So I go to this session the next day. I front up. I'm there for 45 minutes. He actually had a presentation, a slide on the screen, and it said, tell me, what's your ideal date? The general manager was sitting next to me. If he wasn't, I would have yelled out, one where the guy brings his wallet. But at the end of it, they were asking all these questions, and then the people who got the answers right won a prize. So I'm like yelling out answers, and I won. I won't say the brand name because I'm compromising the person, but I won a fitness watch. And then afterwards, one of the guys was like, I really wanted to win that watch. And a couple of the other guys were like really annoyed that I was the new kid and I won. And I said, listen, he owed me that at least, because I was in the hole for dinner, an Uber ride, a couple of bottles of wine, Brunetti's cakes and a grazing platter. So my heart was full because I got something back.
Good on you, Melissa Grima, doing her first stand-up and hopefully not the last. She is our correspondent in Melbourne and she's very good on stage. I encourage her. We're heading into the year 2024 and I've decided that I'm excited about this. I probably won't go out because everyone else is. I might just watch the Sydney. Yeah, that's what I'll do. I'm going to watch the fireworks over the Harbour Bridge in Sydney, which is one of the first in the world and the most broadcast in terms of listeners. It gets millions and millions of viewers because we're before Europe, you see, and before America in our time zone. Anyway, that's what I'm going to do. Old codger that I am. Let's get back to Ling Pang now, and she's chatted with Stephen Cozzallo.
From Leicester, the United Kingdom, Ling Pang on Bondi Tunes International.
Hi, this is Ling Pang for Bondi Tunes International, and I talked with the lead vocalist, Stephen Cozzallo of Odyssey, courtesy of Livewire. How are you?
Hi, I'm very well, thank you. And yourself?
I'm very well, thank you. Back in the 70s and 80s, Odyssey was a disco musical force. So popular, regular appearance on Top of the Pops, disco shows were huge in those days. You must be so proud of Odyssey.
Oh, I'm immensely proud, I have to say. And speaking of Top of the Pops, there's an episode where we did Going Back to My Roots. You can see it on YouTube. If you look to the right of your screen, there's a kid with a big afro playing guitar. I have no idea who that kid is, but they say he looks a little bit like me. And because, of course, I'm far too young to have been there. Wink, wink.
You come from a musical family, and I believe Odyssey began with your mum being one of the founders of the band, and they started singing and performing as early as the 60s.
Yes, it absolutely is correct. It started out as the Lopez sisters, my mom and her two sisters. There was a group even before that, but yes, it was the Lopez sisters, and it was my mom and Louise, who everybody knows later from Odyssey, and my aunt Carmen, who retired from the group. The show business was a little bit not to her liking, and she left the group to marry. And so my mom and aunt pretty much concentrated on songwriting and doing things like that. And Odyssey came about in the 70s when the city of New York was like nearly bankrupt. My brothers and I, we were teenagers, or almost young men, just about, not going to school. There was no work to be found. It was a horrible time in New York. It's a very dangerous city. It was not a nice place to be in the mid-70s. So Odyssey was kind of formed as a means to pay the rent, to be perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. We had a lodger named Tony Reynolds, who was the original bass player in Odyssey. My brothers and I, my aunt, my mom, and we would get extra musicians, and we started doing the tourist circuit around New York to, as I say, pay the rent and for my mother to be able to feed three grown men practically.
Your mom and aunt were so beautiful and attractive looking ladies.
I think you're absolutely right on that. Sometimes when I see old footage, especially, you know, in the Odyssey era, and I see my mom and I think, oh, wow, look at my auntie. My goodness, look how young they are. And then I stop and do the math and I think, whoa, wait a minute. They were pretty old ladies by the time a lot of this footage was taken, but they just retain their amazing beauty, right? Well into their 70s.
So, Stephen, did you have any interest in music from early on in your life? Or you already love music literally from birth?
Almost from birth. From my earliest recollection is about two and a half. There was always a piano in my house, our house. And I could reach up, standing on the floor, and anything that I heard on the television, not anything, but most things that I heard, I could reach up and pick it out, even though I couldn't see the keys or reach the keys of the piano. And started my first musical collaboration with a kid who lived just over the road from me when I was about 8 and he was 9. And I had a little toy keyboard. He had a guitar. But we used to get together at each other's house and we started working on, you know, little 8 and 9 year old compositions. But, you know, the interest was always there. And long before Odyssey, actually, I was I'd become a professional in the music industry in my teens.
Odyssey's 80s mega hits, were they a surprise to your mom and aunt?
Well, Native New Yorker wasn't a huge surprise, I have to say, because as I mentioned, it was New York was the morale of the city was just at an all-time low.
Here is Native New Yorker.
Subways, running with people, up in Harlem, down on Broadway.
And so when that song came out, it just sort of reminded New Yorkers of who we are and what we're made of. And I think for that reason alone, because the song was done previously by Frankie Valli, who people might know from the Four Seasons.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah.
He recorded the song first. But things hadn't gotten in New York to quite the point that they did by the time we recorded it and did it and released it in 77, where, like, as I say, New York was just about at the rock bottom that it could be. And so it wasn't a real big surprise when the song took off, because it was just the thing that was needed at that time. As for the rest, those are all hit and miss. Our next album, Nothing came off of that album, second album, and then it was the third album that the top 10 hits really started coming, you know, fast and furious and beyond.
Beautiful songs. Also special is that when you watch Odyssey on Top of the Pops, always look happy and cheerful, and they give you a lift.
I've heard, and I don't want to blow my own horn, this is just what I've been told, that is the one thing that, even as I continue with the legacy today, that many of people who come to see our shows still say about Odyssey. They even say I look like my mother, even though I don't see it. But that same thing comes across when we just always have a good time. And when you have a good time, you give your audience permission to have a good time. And that seems to have carried through me.
You'll continue with the legacy of the band. Your mother would be proud of you.
I like to think so. I like to think that she's always with me. She visits me and my aunt. And I'm immensely grateful for all of the over the years, over the decades now, of the immense array of talent that has come through to assist me in carrying on with this legacy. I couldn't have done it without each and all of them, over the musicians, singers, others, you know, who have helped me to keep this legacy moving forward. It's I've been incredibly blessed, and I like to think that Mom would be very proud. I'm sorry she didn't get to meet so many of the people that I've been working with, especially over the last 10 years.
Tell me about the current setup of the band.
The members of the group are not the Peter sisters anymore. They're kind of long gone now. I have two ladies who record with me. One by the name of KJ. Her name is Kate Sutherland, but we call her KJ. And another lady by the name of Michelle John, who also records with us and has been gigging with me and touring with me. And they are my two ladies now of Odyssey.
When you're on stage, visual, costumes, choreography, all blending together. Do you also are responsible for the design and staging?
Yes. Actually, as far as the staging, I have a sort of loose but tight sort of guideline. We do what I call eyeball choreography. What that is that basically we're all good enough dancers where we all just sort of join in. We almost know instinctively what moves the other's going to do. And so we all have a way of just falling in together. And it always looks like we designed it, you know, months ago, even though we're doing it live and spontaneously in that moment. And as far as the costuming goes, the one complaint I think I have about some modern entertainers, I insist that we have to look like we meant to come here and perform for people, not like we just picked up our jeans off from the side of the bed from last night and t-shirt and just threw it on to come and do this show. No, I want us to dress up, wear proper performance clothes, you know, clothes that simply say we've made an effort to come here tonight to perform for you.
The time has changed since the 80s. And how do you find that the music and the style appeal to the younger fans?
Well, that's the wonderful thing that the whole era, even with the modern music, a lot of it is sampled from old music, from the 70s and the 80s music. And a lot of young people have become curious about where, because they all know it's sampled and it's old stuff just redone and reimagined. And so we have an amazing following, and particularly here in Britain, it's also the fact that the parents play this music, our music, grandparents play our music for kids. And as bad as we may think they are, these even will be the good old days for our grandchildren. And we even do a few gigs, several a year throughout the country, where it's all young people. I mean, we call them the kiddie gigs. I mean, we're talking about very young adults, of course, 20 years old, 25. But when you consider that our music was made 30 years before a lot of them, well, 20 years at least, before a lot of them were even born. But they know about it because it still gets played on commercial radio, the BBC, throughout a lot of countries, and still gets occasional play in the clubs.
I want to know more about Odyssey moving over to UK. I love to play another song. Would you like to tell me which song you want to play?
Well, this particular Odyssey track marks a sort of a move over, sort of going back to our roots, so to speak. More about that later. But it was a sort of change of direction for Odyssey. It's a song called Inside Out, and it's one of my favorite Odyssey tracks.
Feel the city light surround you. And she's always on the phone, but you just don't think that you can fight it. Don't give up, 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 darling, what you dream. It's like the words here in this song.
You said Odyssey has been very busy since you arrived in the UK 25 years ago. Do you think that the 25 years in the UK have helped Odyssey to develop the band even further to the fans across the world?
Absolutely. First of all, we had more hits in the UK than we did in the United States. And the reason for that was, I guess I'll have to just say that there's a different, a kind of segregation that existed in the music industry back in the day. And basically, the short of it was that black artists were supposed to perform a certain kind of music, supposed to have a certain kind of sound, if you like, which Odyssey didn't precisely conform to. We did all kinds of stuff, all kinds of flavors, all kinds of influences and things like that, which were at our time just unheard of. So it was very difficult for the label to market us. They just didn't know, you know, we weren't black enough to be black and weren't white enough to be white and weren't green enough to be green. So they didn't know, they couldn't figure out how to market the group on, with such a broad range of material. In the UK, there wasn't that same element of segregation. If they liked a group, a band, whatever its makeup, whatever color the group was, whatever influences it had, or whether it had several different, it didn't matter. So if you listen to all of our top five hits, none of them sound like the other one. The only common denominator, except for going back to my roots, is my mom's voice. That's the only thing that ties them all together. But otherwise, it would be difficult to even know that it was the same band because the music is so different. And yet they all five of those, plus some others that were what we call turntable hits that got played in the clubs and played at the blue light house parties, you know, kind of thing.
Did your mom, Lillian, retire from music or continue to perform until her last days?
No, she did retire. I took over the band in the early millennium, I think, maybe 2006, 2007, somewhere. You have to forgive me. I'm a little vague on it. That's not the time I actually like to think about, to be honest. But somewhere around 2006, 2007, maybe, we did one last big tour, last big arena tour. And from then on, the traveling back and forth, because she lived here sometimes in the UK, and then mostly she lived in Florida, in a part of Florida that was quite remote, not reasonably close to an airport and things like that. So it began to take a toll on my mom as she got older. And a bit further down the road was the early stages of cancer. And so that made things even harder for her. And so gradually, that's where I had to start looking for the singers and trying to keep it going. When she finally just retired and said, listen, you know what, I just can't do it anymore. So pretty much kept it moving forward from there.
In 2014, your band recorded an EP together. Tell me about this.
Well, that was the first, primarily, most of my, although I did some of the recordings with Odyssey and was on some of the albums, mostly my contribution to the group had always been its live performances. I was a musical director, you know, throughout the 80s and, you know, for a time in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And so I was always the guy who put the live shows together. But I have always had production skills, you know, technical skills, et cetera, et cetera. And I felt like in order for us to keep the legacy going, we needed to have more material, you know, new material, plus maybe some remakes of the old material. And so that's how that came about. But at the time, if I can be completely honest, Nile Rodgers from Chic had sort of made his own reemergence. And suddenly he became, you know, the man once again, almost as much as he was back in the 70s and 80s. And little known to a lot of people, Chic had written music for everybody, including Odyssey. And Together was one such song where it was written and actually performed by Nile Rodgers and Bernard Edwards. But it wasn't produced by them. And for some reason, it didn't get I think by that time, they were everywhere, and I think they were, you know, had pretty much done what they were going to do. So that one song, Together, didn't get much traction, didn't get much airplay or anything or much attention at all. Hmm. But since he was back in the news in 2014 and thereabouts, we thought, well, let's revisit that song. And so I sort of brought it up to date. I modernized it a bit, sang the lead myself, and we did that EP. And it did marginally well. At least at the very least, let the world know that I'm still out here, we're still out here, and Odyssey is still going and still making music and going forward.
Next year, have you got gigs already planned for that?
Oh my goodness. Well, I have to tell you, 2020 was already set to be a really banner year. We've got, we had 8 arena gigs with the fabulous Four Tops and the Temptations. You know, opening for lots of major acts all over the country and venues from small theaters right up to arenas.
Yeah.
And then COVID happened. But the good news has been that most of those performances, have, rather than being canceled, have just been postponed.
Yeah.
I think at last count, I think we already have about 50-odd dates. Well, I just want to say that if you want to catch up with us, it's hashtag Odyssey. NYC, that's O-D-Y-S-S-E-Y-N-Y-C. And you can find us on Facebook, Odyssey, the 80s band, or my name, Stephen Collazo. And you can find out where we're going to be and what we're doing and everything. And it'd be lovely to meet everybody, because I never get tired of hearing the stories of how our music has been the backdrop. For so many people's lives. It's always so wonderful. It's a wonderful privilege. And I'd like to thank you for having me.
You're welcome, Stephen. Lovely having you on the show. Now, could you introduce one more song for us to play?
Oh, fantastic. Well, the last song will be an old school expression of what our new motto is today. It's old school meets new school meets old school. That's what Odyssey is today. And to sum that up, our last song would be Going Back to My Roots.
Thank you.
This is Ling Pang for Bonang Tunes International, and I talked with the lead vocalist, Stephen Klazo of Odyssey.
Your good friend around the planet, Bonang Tunes International.
And if you have just joined us, I'm Henry for Bonang Tunes International in Sydney, Australia, and we're heading into the year 2024. Now, we're just playing some interviews I've done through the year, and earlier on in the year, I interviewed Zachary Ward in South America. This is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting from Australia and around the world. I'm Henry on the eastern suburbs of Sydney. I'm joined by Zachary Ward, who's in Medellin in Colombia in South America. Did I pronounce that town correctly, Zach?
Close enough, yeah, Medellin. Medellin. The locals say Medellin. Other people in Colombia tend to say Medellin.
Okay. Now, I just want to... want to explain to our listeners that I've known Zach since he was 3 years old. He doesn't remember meeting me, I'm sure, but I remember meeting him. And the reason for that is because my girlfriend is his aunt. Zach, I interviewed your cousin, actually, Jacob Strong, who was wandering around Japan by himself on a motor, a bicycle. He had also been in South America. Back in the day, back in the 80s and 70s, when people left school or college, they went to London, they went to Paris, they went to Rome, they went to Western Europe. Now people are going to places like South America. Did you wake up one day and think, oh, what will I do today? Oh, I'll go to South America. Or what made you decide that?
I think it was a slow realization. That was a long time coming. At university, I got it into my head that I'd really like to do an exchange program with pretty much any country in South America, just as long as it was within this continent. And there was a lot of red tape to cut through in terms of organizing this exchange program. So I just decided to sideline that, finish university in Australia instead, and actually try my hand at living here independently for at least a year.
How's that going?
It's going pretty well, actually. It's been 6 months now since I arrived. I landed in Cusco, which I deemed not to my liking almost immediately. And then I started catching buses up the West Coast until I found myself in Medellin about 4 months ago. And it's been delightful.
Did you, you're obviously traveling alone, which is also what Jacob did. I mean, it was bizarre interviewing him in Japan because he was just wandering around on a bicycle by himself and sleeping outside these 7-Eleven stores in Japan. His experience in South America was fantastic, he told me on the radiogram. You were traveling alone. Did it take you long to get friends?
Well, no, actually, that's one of the benefits to traveling alone. You know, you're not held hostage to the whims and fancies of somebody else, a traveling partner or, you know, a girlfriend or a boyfriend. You can really just do what you want. And so you meet a group of people who are heading in a direction towards a particular destination and you don't have any plans. You can just tag along with them, you know, and you make really good friends for about 4 days and then you part ways, likely never to see each other again.
You don't get too close, obviously.
No, you can't really allow that to happen. It's just one way to break your heart again and again on a daily basis, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Now, tell me about Colombia. There's a lot of, you know, Colombia's got this name for itself, as you know. Tell me about life in Colombia, the politics, the social situation, that kind of thing.
Well, from where I'm standing, from what I've seen, I think it's a pretty fluidly running country. But of course, you talk to the people who have lived here their entire lives and they would have another thing to say about it. In terms of family and devotion to that aspect of life, it's, I don't think any country functions better. But in terms of the political spheres here, there are things to work upon. Corruption seems to be rife in the government. The police as well aren't trusted by the criminals or the citizens that they're employed to protect. But I don't really see any of this, you know. In fact, I would say that it seems to be the common word among expats that the people who have the lowest impression of Colombia are Colombians themselves. You know, these are the people who really inflate the propaganda about the drugs and the social situations. But of course, we are looking at it from an advantage perspective in that we can pick up and leave whenever we want.
Good point.
People here do not have that opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel safe walking the streets? I mean, I don't want to sound like, you know, I don't know anything about Colombia, but, you know, there is this kind of image of many places in South America. Do you feel safe walking on the streets at night?
At night, it's not recommended by anybody. Taxi drivers, of course, they have an interest in keeping people off the streets at night and in their taxis with them, but they wouldn't recommend it. Nobody really does. But honestly, I have not come across an issue yet in daylight or at nighttime. Of course, the more I walk around here, the more likely I am to run into some scenario whereby I'm at a disadvantage or at the wrong end of a gun or a knife. But I think that's the case in any city. I feel as comfortable here as I do in my own neighborhood in Sydney.
Yes, and of course, I should mention that Zach is from Rose Bay, which is just down the road from me here on Bondi Beach in the eastern suburbs of Sydney in Australia. Tell me about your day. Now, you mentioned to me off air that you live in quite a dark room. And tell me about your day, what time you get up. What do you do during the day? What's your schedule?
At the moment, I'm waiting to start teaching. So until that happens, I do try and keep myself active because it's a quick and easy way to go mad if one doesn't. So I wake up anywhere between 7 a.m. and 11 a.m. And
I like your style.
Whip myself up a quick breakfast or lunch, depending again on the time, of fruit, because the produce here is remarkable. Especially fruit. And then I'm out the door. Generally, I head up to a sleepy library up in the hills. Good view of Colombia, because Colombia is situated in a valley. So there are vantage points all around it. Medellin is situated in a valley.
Yeah.
And there are vantage points all around it. And this library is a nice, peaceful place. I spend hours up there either studying or I'm working on a novel, actually, at the moment.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I devote myself as often and religiously as I can to that. And, there is a community of expats living in Laureles, which is on the west side of Medellin. If I'm lucky enough to catch them on a slow day, then we'll meet up and we'll have lunch or drinks. Or the alcohol does flow pretty consistently here in Colombia. the weekends, yeah, they're usually pretty fueled. The weeks are sleepy, but they seem to race past. I cannot believe I've been here for 6 months.
Cities that never close down, from New York to Rio, an old London town. But no matter how far or how wide I roam, I still call Australia. Australia home.
On iTunes, International broadcasts all around the world, but all of the world comes to Bondi Beach, Australia, especially in summer. This February, Mike Braid from Liverpool, England, will join Henry O'Donovan on Bondi Beach, Sydney, Australia, and they'll walk the streets of Bondi to chat with people from everywhere. Japan, Europe, South America, North America, Spain, Israel, Russia. I mean everywhere. They'll be there after dark on the streets of Bondi to find out what people all over the world think of their futures in a volatile time. But we'll have fun too. We'll chat about their customs, what makes them happy. We want to get a world view of events from people all over the world. It's a global thing because we are Bondi Tunes International. We are Real Radio.
The sun never sets on Bondi Tunes.
From Australia, this is Bondi Tunes.
If you've just joined us, I'm Henry for Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting from Australia and around the world, and I'm talking with Zach Ward, who's in Medellin in Colombia in South America. Tell me about this novel, Zach.
Oh, God. usually my fallback response to that is you'll just have to buy a hard copy at retail price when it comes out. But it's, funnily enough, it's not about anything here, really. I suppose it is in a broader sense, but it's more a critique, a parody. It's satirical of Western culture, how I observed it there. It's a part of the reason I got away, actually, was to step back from it so that I could devote myself to this project. Set in and around a university, which, you know, having just come out of university myself about a year ago, it's really one of the things I know best. So I think James Joyce said, you know, write about what you know because your audience will immediately detect if you don't know what you're writing about.
Do you think that your experience over there in Colombia will affect your writing of the book? I mean, that's probably a rhetorical question.
Absolutely, especially in the fact that I tend to write better, at least I tend to be more creative when I'm challenged or when I'm on the brink. You know, my thought patterns, I guess, are altered by the fact that I'm here on my own. I'm sort of at the very end of this rope on the other side of the world. And it's a stimulating thing every day, you know, to wake up. And I think in Sydney I was feeling very sluggish. But again, yeah, the life I've noticed in Colombia stands in stark contrast in many ways to the life which we lead in cities like Sydney, cities like London and New York, I think. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's what's the weather like, by the way?
Oh, they call this the city of the eternal spring. I don't find it to be that exactly, but similar to Sydney, you know, you get showers in the late afternoon. Otherwise, it's fairly temperate. The sun shines often enough. It's nice. It's good.
And what do you do with media? Do you watch TV?
No, I tend to. Well, I mean, the thing is, I can barely understand it anyway. So.
It's just interesting because television is so global now. You'd probably be able to get BBC World or CNN or whatever. But I'm sure you probably are not interested.
Nor am I technologically adroit enough to find those channels, I think. So generally I walk in if I've just booked a room for a month or something. There tend to be TVs there. And the first thing I do is disconnect the ugly things and hide them in a cupboard. And yeah, so... so I'm pretty off the grid in that manner. If I want to stay abreast of current affairs, then I'll just read a news article or something like that.
Yes, the Sydney Morning Herald, perhaps.
Yeah, classic.
It's interesting because when I went traveling, I went to Israel in 1983 when I was 20, and it was the most violent year in the history of Israel since 1948. And I picked that year to go to Israel, and I had no credit card, and I had no internet, and I could barely afford to make a phone call. So if I got stuck, I was stuck. You know what I mean? At least you've got these connections. Mm-hmm. You're talking to me on the other side of the world, you know, through the internet. It's probably not as scary, I guess, as it was for me.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's a wonder that you guys went traveling at all back in the day without any of those connections. On New Year's Eve, I dropped my phone into a toilet bowl. And all of a sudden, it was like a lifeline had just been cut. And I started to...
Oh, no.
I started to reconsider how I was going to get in contact with people. Obviously the computer helps, but when you're in transit, you know, when you're on a bus for a couple of days, you can't really just bust out the computer and start talking to people. That's what the phone is for.
Yes.
And it came back to life at a certain point in the night. But, it was a worry. I am pretty dependent on the global communication afforded me by my technological devices.
For sure. I would be having a second phone on standby if I were you. Zach, how long do you intend to stay there?
I don't know, really. Until the job is done, I guess. Until I no longer find enjoyment here. And I don't know how long that could be. Every day is fun.
I would love to be in your position. I think it's fantastic. You could be there. Tell me about your teaching, by the way. What exactly are you teaching?
English. English is a second language to adults.
And they obviously speak Spanish, yeah?
They do, yes. A lot of the modus operandi of a lot of these schools is that you walk in and you immediately you put your foot down and you say, right, from here on out, this is an English-speaking only zone. And so, you know, you really don't need to have any grasp of Spanish whatsoever in order to become applicable to teach people over here.
Of course, your mother, who was born the same year as me in 1962, so she's the same age as me, she also taught English. And
she
still does, I think. I'm not sure.
She does, yeah. She just received an unwanted promotion. She's
is that right?
Close to the grindstone, yeah.
Is it very difficult, given that you don't speak Spanish, is it very, this confuses me, how you can teach people English. You did mention this is an English-speaking zone. My French teacher used to say that to us in class, and we just ignored her. do you find it difficult? What are the difficulties of this?
I'll tell you, time constraints, really. Sometimes it takes a while to get the ball rolling on these things, you know, or to open their minds up to some of these concepts. And just at the point, very often, just at the point where they're starting to get it, or, you know, it's becoming more fluid for them, or we've picked up enough momentum, and then we have to call it a day, you know, and then they go home and they might get sluggish again or forget everything and come back, and we sort of have to start off where we began the day before. But a lot of these people, if they're there, they want to learn, you know.
Yeah.
They have either a passion for the language or they want to travel the West. And so it's very easy. It's a lot easier teaching people who have an enthusiasm that I think children don't really bring with them to the classroom.
Yes, and it's well said, because a lot of kids in Australian schools couldn't give a damn, you know. So if they're passionate, that's a big deal. When you go out in the evening and socialize, do you go to bars with expats, or do you mix with the locals, or how does that work?
I like to mix it. I didn't come to Colombia to socialize purely with expatriates. But of course, there's a shared language, which makes communication a lot easier.
Kind of easier, yes.
Yeah, but you will find that, Colombian people are some of the most warm and inviting people in the world. And if you've met them once or you've shared one drink with them, then they'll invite you to share many more with them in the future. So I try and keep these people close or keep them high on my list of contacts so that when I want to see them, they're ready to go.
Do you ever feel homesick for Australia?
The people, certainly. But that is really where that ends. Surprisingly. Yeah. They say the 6-month point is actually where it starts to hit, you know. And I'm approaching that now. That'll be in about a week.
I can't believe you've been there that long. My goodness. So you will eventually come back to Australia, or maybe not?
I'll definitely be back. I don't know about how long. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff I left there, you know, some clothes that I like.
Oh, yeah. A couple of things. Zach, what do people in Colombia do at Christmas?
It's a month-long process from December 1st to about January 1st. The clock stops. The aguardiente, which is their national beverage, comes out of the cupboard, and they go to town on it. It's a good time for family.
This is at the beginning of December, is that right?
December the 1st.
They're not wasting any time. And tell me about this national drink.
Aguardiente. Oh, it's fire water. It's an aniseed-based liqueur. It wasn't to my liking, but after about four or five bottles of the stuff, you actually do grow quite accustomed to it, as with anything. It is raw. It is a very raw way to get drunk. But it's a cultural. It's a cultural phenomenon here, and they all do it. And it's I was told by a friend of mine that it's actually a time of where people vent their feelings of frustration towards family members. So small acts of kind of friendly domestic violence actually do increase a bit around.
Yes, but that can be said about anywhere in the world, really. Christmas is a pressure cooker time of the year, but a whole month
I know.
Of December.
It's a slaughterhouse over here. People dropping in the streets. But aside from the drinking, the lights, the festivities, they're amazing. I really had no anticipation of what a Colombian Christmas would be like, and they do it up to the nines here.
And there is obviously they're Catholic. Yep.
Yes. Yes.
And
they're religious.
It's funny how Catholicism mixes so well with alcohol.
I know, right? It's almost like an excuse. It's like, yes, we are Catholics, which means that
we have to drink. Thank you so much for joining me here on Bondi Tunes International.
Anytime. Good to speak to you, Henry.
That's Zach Ward. This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
From Australia, this is Bondi Tunes.
Henry O'Donovan.